Today's episode of the podcast is sponsored by Dr. Carlo Bayraktarian.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Dev Narek from St. Sarkis Church, along with our co-host, Mr. Veh Bazdigyan. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. In today's show, we have an interview with director and producer Bharat Maronian about his upcoming movie, Women of 1915. Veh and I will also talk about the events of the National Representative Assembly, which took place last week here at St. Sarkis Church. But first, let us start our show with a prayer of the Divine Liturgy of the Armenian Church.
Tun vor gornes kez orna panognera, der yev gesurpes kezi vstahognera. Pyrge ku jovurtet, orne ku jarankutunet, hu yegeretsit ampoch bahe. Sörpe asonk, voronk sirov hojaretsan ku dunet vayeluch bahel. Paravore mez, asvadzayen ku zorutyampet, yev mila ker kezi abavinogneres. O Lord, you bless those who bless you and sanctify those who put their trust in you. Save your people and bless your inheritance. Preserve the fullness of your church. Sanctify those who in love preserve the splendor of your house. Glorify us with your divine power and forsake not those who put their trust in you. Amen. Mayra raksne dinaman, da parvem kezanaman, daranam mare evishoger, saruit sirta daranaser, daranas garun zakaber, yeskarinem siruter, im sartim mech kosirov, noras kharem horinel, im hokum mech havatov, sirota charem shinel, tuim ruistes, tuim ruistes, yesabrum. So we had quite a busy week here at St. Sarkis Church, Der Narek. I can honestly say I've known you for many years, and the stress level was considerably high.
It was, especially the last week and the days leading to last week. It was a lot for us to organize the NRA. Now, let me give you a little background here. For 50 years, the communities here in New York, both St. Illuminators and St. Sarkis, have not organized this assembly. And it was in 2010 when we were kind of asked that maybe it's about time for you guys to do something. So we decided to host the event jointly with St.
If I could ask, jointly with St. Illuminators.
With St. Illuminators.
How did the New York community get the free pass for so many years?
Well, we have always said that there are no great hotels here and the hotels are expensive. Mm-hmm. And we got away with that up until 2010 when we were able to organize and it was relatively comparable with other communities. And it sounds like, or it seemed like, everyone enjoyed their stay here in New York. So last year it was our turn when I invited everyone to come and for us to host. And I did not know at that time the amount of work that we had to put into making this convention a successful one. But I'm happy to report that it was a successful convention and everything was organized perfectly due to the hard work that the members of the steering committee put into making this a huge success.
Yes, absolute kudos. I have to say, I didn't participate in a lot of the events, but from what I saw, it seemed like a ton of work went into it, and it was incredibly well prepared.
There were a lot of details, you know, that probably you and I would not take into consideration. But those ladies who worked with us, especially Dr. Luisa Kubikin, she did a fantastic job, and everyone who helped her. The amount of compliments that we received there, it was amazing.
That's great. How would you say it compared to previous years? And obviously, you're going to have a slight bias because this was our community here. But in terms of the overall reception and the energy level? Would you say people were enthusiastic? And did they were they excited to be here in New York?
Of course. I mean, it's different when you come to New York compared to, and I'm not putting down any other community, but there's a level of enthusiasm about New York. But also, I would like to say that the general atmosphere of this convention this year was much better compared to other years, because we did not have any major problems to tackle. And last year was a little bit difficult because it was right after the massive commemoration of the centennial of the genocide. And it was right after the visit of Veapar. So there was that fatigue factor.
Oh, absolutely. Everyone was exhausted.
So this year we didn't have that. And another different thing that we had this year was the gathering or the convention that the conference, I should say, that the Yeretskins had.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have that, previous year or the year before that. I think the last time they had it, it was again in 2010 when everybody was here in New York. So it was very exciting. And also another thing that was different this year was the banquet, which we called it the Banquet of Recognition, and it was something mm-hmm. that you attended. Mm-hmm. That was another highlight of the event. So those things helped to make this a little bit different and a better convention.
If I could speak out of turn, I have to say Steve Hagopian is probably the best MC I've ever seen at an Armenian event, or any event for that matter. The guy just kept the entire room energized, kept the conversation moving, and it was just an outstanding performance on his part, while also just kept everybody engaged and excited about being there. So I got to say, for a banquet, to be honest with you, Dan Nuttig, it wasn't like I was really looking forward to coming to a banquet, because I knew it was going to be a bunch of speeches.
And more speeches
and presentations. But I tell you, it was a great time. We were all clapping and laughing and, cheering you on, of course, any opportunity we had, and Yeretskin Ani. Since we were going to go through the sequence of events, the first day you mentioned the Yeretskin's conference. And if I could ask, what was Yeretskin Ani's reflection on the Yeretskin conference? And what happened overall? What was it about?
So you don't want to talk about the clergy conference. It sounds very boring to everyone talking about the clergy conference.
I'm curious to know because you said it's kind of a unique opportunity. How do the Yeretskins come away from this?
Well, experience? I wasn't there, fortunately or unfortunately. I was there only for the introductory remarks. And I looked at their agenda, and it was an ambitious agenda that they had for the afternoon. There were going to be two presentations for that day. And the presentations were taken from their life experience.
Hmm.
Yeretskin being the helper of their spouse, being the helper of the priest, and Yeretskin being the servant of the community. And I thought that whoever came up with those two topics had the brilliant idea of discussing them, because in my introductory remarks, I said there are so many times that we put the priest on the pedestal, and we think that if a community is doing the right things and the priest is a successful priest, he gets all the credit.
Right.
But the family, and especially Yeretskin, they go through a lot to make the life of that parish and the mission of that parish a successful one. And the other part, Yeretskin being a servant of the community, and since this is the year of service, I reflected on my own personal experience, and I said, I come from the seminary, which is, by default, a male-driven society, and we have our perspectives, and it's very difficult for me to understand certain things that happen in the parish, and it is, I get it because of my wife's perspective. Mm-hmm. So when I had the opportunity to speak to Ani, and she was really pleased with the presentations, but also with that sense of camaraderie that, they don't get to be together every day. This was a great opportunity for them to get together, share their concerns, and learn from each other's experience. So
maybe commiserate a little bit about the challenges of being a Yeretskin.
Of course, that goes
hand
in hand.
And I must say, as an aside, Yeretskin Ani really doesn't like being called Yeretskin.
Yes, that's
because
true.
Because it makes her sound like she's an old lady.
We're getting <That's> old.
No, so I always call cool. Any opportunity I get, I call her Yeretskin Ani, and she says, Ve, Kanyan Kambidisen.
She doesn't sound that tough, but she likes to be called by her first name, and that's her choice.
Yeah.
So,
and for our non-Armenian-speaking audience, if you could break down the term Yeretskin, it's almost like as though you are calling somebody old or wise lady, right?
Senior lady.
Senior lady, right.
Yeah.
So you can understand her her hesitation
of course.
With the terminology.
So that day we also had our clergy conference here, and it was in the main hall of our church. We discussed the religious report, the religious council's report, and we had some discussions about, in general, about the operations of the prelacy and the individual parishes. But we also had a health presentation. We had three different doctors who spoke to us about different areas of our health, the things that we need to, or how should we take care of ourselves. This is something that we have never had before. And this was organized by APO, the Armenian Healthcare Association.
Oh, that's great.
Dr. Aram Kazazian and Dr. Louisa Kubikian, they were instrumental in organizing this. We had Dr. Larry Najarian. We had Dr. Mm-hmm. Carlo Bayraktarian, among others, who presented to us. So that was received very well by our clergy.
And could I ask a question on that?
Sure.
What is the greatest concern for somebody in your position? Is it the psychological burden? Is it the stress of the job and the impact that it has on your health? Or is it just like anybody else, eating right, taking care of yourself, exercise?
I think it's a combination of both. But they brought a different perspective, which is, you know, as clergy, sometimes you have different assignments. You're in a certain parish and then you move to another parish. And the lack of continuation of healthcare could be a problem. Mm-hmm. So...
Oh, so a little bit of the administrative aspect of
sure.
securing healthcare.
So it was something that I think everybody enjoyed. And then that night we went to our residence, and both their hires and the Redskins, and we had a little get-together, a fellowship hour.
Oh, that's nice.
Good dinner, good food. And we had some holy smokes going on afterwards.
Holy smokes.
Yes, we're not going to elaborate on that. But it was all good. Everyone was happy. Everyone enjoyed.
Indulged a little bit.
Yes. We needed that before the convention started, you know. That.
Who cooked all the food?
We had help.
So that's a lot of food. That's a lot of meals to prepare. How many priests and parishes overall were represented?
The prelacy has 19 parishes. And this is the Eastern USA. And not every parish has their pastor. Sometimes we have traveling clergy who cover for mission parishes. So that night we had almost 30 people attending the dinner. Hmm. So that's a nice dinner.
That's
a good indicator.
It was a big event.
God was gracious. It did not rain, so we were able to sit outside. The weather was so nice. Otherwise, it would have been a challenge to fit everyone in. So the following day, Thursday, we started our convention, the National Representative Assembly, and all our meetings were taking place at LaGuardia Plaza, which formerly used to be known as Crown Plaza.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's a downgrade of what they had initially.
And what was the initial plan? Oh, for what it was. What it once was.
Yes.
That's the same hotel.
Yeah, it is the same hotel.
It's an airport hotel. It's all about strategic placement. You have people coming in from all over the East Coast.
That's why we were there. Yeah.
So it made sense.
So the first day of the convention is always kind of slow because you have different committees forming, you have elections of Tivan. So you're setting up basically for the work that is coming for the following days. You have all reports from the Religious Council, Executive Council, the ARIC, ANIC, the Religious Educational Committee, the National Education Committee, among other reports that are submitted, studied, evaluated. And after that long day, all delegates came to St. Sarkis Church,
right,
where we had church service. We took the group photo in front of our sanctuary, and then there was dinner downstairs and a little program, which everyone seemed to enjoy.
I heard only great things, Der Nuttig. Friday night when I attended the banquet, everybody was talking about how entertaining it was, how the Yeraz Barachum put on an outstanding show, and also the musical accompaniment or the musical songs that were presented by Armin
and Zepur
Arzivian. And of course, we can't forget
our highlight.
I don't want to call it the highlight, but of course it did draw the most attention because it was not anticipated. And you can tell us a quick story about Mr. Barsamian's participation.
Sure. So for the program for that night, I asked Sarpazan if he wanted anything specific. And Sarpazan told if we could put a video together highlighting the various programs of our church, which Greg was so graciously able to do that in such a short time. And the video, the production came out to be a beautiful production. I posted it on Facebook, and within a day, we had over 1,000 views on Facebook.
Wow.
Everyone seems to like that video. So the idea was for us to present that video and for us to have also Yeraz dance group performing.
Mm-hmm.
So there was this little miscommunication. We had told, or I had told Yeraz to be here at 7:30 and stay until 8:30. For some reason, the first part was not properly communicated. They understood the 8:30 part, so they told me that they were getting arriving at 8:30. So 7:30 came, we played the video, now we have a whole hour of sitting there. And I wanted Yeraz very much to come and dance because, you know, the kids were preparing and I wanted to give them that opportunity to perform in front of representatives from various communities.
Mm-hmm.
So the show must go on. I look around and I see Mr. Ed Barsamian. And without even talking to him and asking him if he was ready,
you put him on the spot.
I took a chance and I introduced him. And to my surprise, Ed Barsamian comes to the podium and he pulls a stack of papers from the pocket of his jacket and he starts telling the hilarious jokes one after the other. And at some point, I look at the audience and everyone is laughing, including the clergy.
That's great.
So he made the day.
You know, a little bit of laughter can really add a lot to it.
Humor is terrific. a great medicine.
Now, do you think Mr. Barsamian travels with a stack of papers in his pocket at all times?
I do not.
Ready to go and start telling jokes?
Or this is something that we need to ask him, but he saved the day. And of course, we had our choir master, Mr. Armin Arzivian, and his wife, Digan Zepur, our secretary.
Who is our secretary?
Yes, they performed, and that was beautiful. And it was 8:20 when Yeraz arrived, and they were ready, and they performed 3 or 4 pieces. And it was about 9 o'clock where I had to tell the delegates that your bus is ready, maybe it's time for you to go to your hotel. Everyone seemed to be happy, and I heard a lot of compliments. But there's one other thing that I want to tell you, Veh. I didn't mention this before. On Thursday morning when we started the meetings, I had a number of delegates coming and saying, what is wrong? Today is Thursday and there's no podcast.
Oh.
We failed to record a podcast last week.
Well, we had a busy week. You had a very busy week.
We had a busy week, but you know,
and it was difficult to do, but we're doing the recap now,
sure.
So.
But that tells that, you know, people are listening and they're waiting for our podcast. And that's a compliment that, you know, I want to share that with you. Friday was the big day because you have all the breakout sessions with different groups discussing various topics. And at the end, you have those groups presenting. So I was in a group where we discussed youth ministry. This was something that was discussed last year, and this year we felt that we need to discuss it again. And I'm so happy to report that the assembly approved our recommendations, and they voted, and they approved our budget.
And, great. So can you highlight a couple of the recommendations?
Sure. The recommendation was to establish an office for youth ministry for our prelacy, and to hire someone who will run that ministry, and to create a program where various parishes will easily use and implement that program, which will be guided and helped by this new position that will be created. Mm-hmm. And of course, there was the budget piece of that, which was approved. So
that's great.
It is on the council now, the religious council and the executive council of the prelacy, to try to find the right person for that position, and to also form a committee who will basically supervise and run mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. the activities of the youth ministry. The goal of the youth ministry is to have youth groups and youth activities in various parishes, which right now we are lacking. We presented what we have done in the past year, that Hrant and myself, we've been trying to implement certain things as a pilot project in our parishes, and we reported the results of our kind of study. Mm-hmm. And
Der Hrant from Dearborn?
Yes.
Michigan?
St. Sarkis in Dearborn. The two St. Sarkises.
Oh, was that scripted that way, where the St. Sarkises would take the lead
in the youth ministry? No, I said we took this on us because of our BMIs, body mass indexes. We have similar BMIs. But I don't think anybody got the joke. They're so serious, you know.
Yeah, that's
they didn't get
it. It's over a lot of heads.
Yeah. So it's a lot of work now for the executive council, the religious council, to kind of implement what was recommended by the panel. And then that night we had the banquet. What was your impressions on the banquet there?
Well, I mentioned how impressed I was with Steve when we let off on that topic. I thought it was a terrific banquet. I mean, what could you say about a banquet? Obviously, you hope the food's good. And it was. It was very good. The service was good.
Service was okay. Could have
been
much better.
It was okay.
It
was fine. It was fine. I know they had some hiccups leading into the event, but I didn't feel it. I don't think the crowd felt it.
So that's good.
It was fine. And in terms of the camaraderie, I liked the format. If I could just say, normally when you go to an event, whether it's Armenian events or, you know, non-Armenian banquets, fundraisers, things like that, you have the speaking segment, which will run for an extended period of time without any interruptions. I like the way Steve broke it up, where it was he would do a segment, we would do a presentation, award would be presented. Well, one of my heroes, Ken Sarajan, was one of the recipients of the awards. And, you know, it's great. You get to reflect on that moment. And then when you break up afterwards, you can have a discussion. You can go visit with people you run over and say hello and congratulate folks and then go back and sit down. So I like the format. I like the way it was set up. I took away a lot from that.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the people who were honored. We had Youth Leadership Award. It was presented to two people from our church. From our community, Christopher Magarian and Debbie Agopian. I presented them, and they received the award from Serpazan. But the highlight of the evening, the most important awards that were given that night, one was given to our own first chairman, Mr. Arthur Hayrabedian, who was presented by Dr. George Petrosian. Everyone in our community seemed to like Dr. George Petrosian, prominent cardiologist at St. Francis. Mm-hmm. And Arthur Hayrabedian received the award of Eagle of the Prelacy. It's the highest award that the prelacy has for his lifelong achievements in our community and also the Armenian prelacy. And the man of the year was Dr. Garo Armen. What a humble person. You know, when you look at all the things that
his body of work, he's an incredibly accomplished person.
All the help that he has provided to our homeland, to Armenia, and the way that he stood up and he spoke, he was able to touch everyone with his speech.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, he was presented by Mr. Shant Mardirosyan, who is the chairman emeritus of the Near East Relief Foundation. It was such a beautiful evening. And then, of course, Ken Sarajan. That was a surprise. Nobody knew about that.
You could tell it was a surprise.
It was a surprise.
It was not planned. It wasn't scripted. It was not written in the upcoming announcements. So, yeah, that was... And you could tell he was taken aback by it.
Yeah. And as you said, Steve Agopian, who was the chairman of our executive council, who served on the council for the past 6 years and his term was over, he's from the community of Granite City. He did a fantastic job. So we are going to miss Mr. Steve Agopian, but hopefully after his hiatus of a year or two, he'll be back to serve the prelacy. Mm-hmm. So, Saturday was the final day of our convention of the assembly, and we on Saturday you vote for the budget, and budget it's always the part that I don't like. I don't like numbers. I don't understand numbers, but there's always extensive discussion. But I would like to say that Dan Gulbengen, who is from our community, who is the treasurer of the prelacy, has done a wonderful job, and the reports were approved. The budget was the budget passed, and I'd like to say that we moved pretty fast on that part. And then we had the elections,
mm-hmm.
and during the elections, new members for the executive council and the religious council were elected. And Veh, congratulations.
Thank you.
You are part of the executive council.
That's right.
It's an honor.
It was a surprise for me when I got the phone call from you, followed by the phone call from Sirpazan Oshagan. When he asked me if I would do it, I said, I don't think I'm really in a position to turn you down, Sirpazan. And he said, well, of course you can turn me down, but I would hope you wouldn't. And I couldn't. I couldn't.
That's the attitude that Sarpazan appreciates very much, I'm sure.
So, and you as well, Dernarek. Congratulations to being on the Religious Council.
So the way that it works, the Religious Council, we will have our meetings. Because I have been in the council for a term of 6 years previously. We would sit and have our meetings prior to the Executive Council meeting. And then we will have a joint meeting every time. So
mm-hmm.
we'll get to sit with each other. And it's a good thing to see that now we have three people from the community of St. Sarkis Church
involved in the prelacy.
Involved in heavily
prelacy activities.
Yeah. So hopefully it will be a good year. I know there's a lot for us to achieve with the youth ministry and also Veapar's visit. As you know, Veapar is coming in October, as the prelacy will celebrate his 20th anniversary of his ordination as the Catholicos of the Great House of Cilicia.
There, Nareg, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the highlight of the weekend for me, which was the Hontes. I'm sure it was for you as well. Despite all the hard work that went into the NRA, I felt so proud watching the kids do their incredible presentations and performances of Armenian music, Armenian poetry,
and a short play.
That's right. From the Suzanne and Hovsep Hagopian Saturday School of St. Sarkis Armenian Church. So as we lead into the next segment of the podcast, let's take a listen to our kids singing so beautifully.
Oh,
On Saturday, June 4, 2016, there will be the world premiere of the movie Women of 1915. This is a documentary by Bharat Maronian. And today we have the producer and the director with us on the phone. Mr. Maronian, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Father Narek. It's a pleasure.
This is an exciting project, Women of 1915, and this is a project that is following your debut project, Orphans of the Genocide. Am I correct?
Correct.
So why don't you tell us about your journey?
Well, let me briefly talk to you about what Women of 1915 is about. It's a documentary film, as you said, about the plight and survival of the Armenian women during the genocide. And it's also about all those non-Armenian women who came to their rescue. As we know, hundreds of women, European women, American women, Canadian, even Australian women, they left their comfortable plush lives behind and flocked into the killing fields of the Armenian genocide to rescue and save these the Armenian women who have been going through unimaginable difficulties. The way the genocide was perpetrated on the Armenians by the Ottoman Turks was, firstly, they divided the Armenian family. What they did is they took the men away, and the men were gone. So what was left is the women and children and the elderly. So the women became the breadwinner of the household, the educator of the household, and also, of course, the classic, you know, duties of a woman that she had to do to keep the family going. Add to that the unimaginable indignities that she had to face, any rape or forcible integration into Turkish society, forcibly marrying Turks or Kurds or Arabs just to, you know, survive and to keep the family going. And in fact, these were the women of 1915, the Armenian women of 1915, were the ones who put the foundations of the post-genocide Armenian communities around the world.
So it sounds like this is the story of a vulnerable group of women, of people, women in this case, who went through the atrocities of the genocide, but also became the seeds of our survivor. Is this the general idea of the documentary?
It is, and the way we present the story, the stories are based on individual experiences of women. And that's how we tell the general story, by focusing or highlighting individuals, you know, and they're all gone. But in some cases, we have some filmed interviews of these survivors. And what we did is we contacted their offsprings, their children or grandchildren in some cases, and they told us the story as, you know, the survivors themselves told us the stories on film.
Excellent. So, Mr. Maronian, how is this documentary related to your first documentary, The Orphans of the Genocide? Are they related at all?
Yes, in general terms, yes. Orphans of the Genocide is, in this case, Orphans of the Genocide was about the plight of the Armenian orphans during the genocide, the children, over 150,000 orphans, Armenian orphans, were saved by one organization, and that happens to be an American organization, the Near East Relief Foundation, that single-handedly gathered, rescued, fed, and sheltered, you know, 150,000 orphans and saved them from death, because these children were left on the streets. Some were exploited, some were violated, some were beaten, some were used as slaves. But, you know, a lot of them, of course, were dead. They disappeared because nobody knows what happened. But what we know is at least 150,000 Armenian Genocide orphans were rescued by Near East Relief Foundation, an American Relief Foundation that saved these children. I mean, it's an amazing story, because there was one single orphanage in Armenia, in Gyumri. Back then it used to be called Alexandropol, where this amazing organization, you know, housed over 20,000 orphans. And thanks to that, the city back then was called the Orphan City, because of the large number of orphans in one orphanage. And by the way, that happens to be the world's largest orphanage ever.
So, going back to your new project, Women of 1915, tell me, how long have you been working on this project?
You know, before I started working on Orphans of the Genocide, my initial plan was to, you know, work on Women of 1915. But in 2010, I read an article by Robert Fisk about a group of an orphanage, actually, in Lebanon that housed about 1,000 Armenian orphans and 200 Kurdish orphans. And the aim of that orphanage was to Turkify these Armenian and Kurdish children. And when I looked at this, when I read this article and did some research and found out the amazing documentation by a third-party group, which happens to be the Franciscan or Jesuit Brotherhood of a Catholic group of priests who, you know, who documented everything, because the event happened in their own church. I said, this is an amazing undiscovered or untold story that we need to tell. So then I jumped on Orphans of the Genocide, and after 2.5 years, we had Orphans of the Genocide, which by the way, it's been an amazing success. I'm very happy about it. Now it's being distributed by NEDA, National Educational Telecommunications Association. Mm-hmm. This organization distributes films or programming to over 275 PBS stations around the country. So they chose Orphans of the Genocide to be a part of their program, national program, and this is an amazing, accomplishment. By the way, so far, over 100 million households have, this signal of Orphans of the Genocide has been reached over 100 million households in the United States.
That is amazing.
Yes, and we hope that Women of 1915 follows the footsteps of Orphans of the Genocide, because, you know, the way it's true that there's the stories of the orphans in Orphans of the Genocide, and similarly the stories of the women, the Armenian women and Women of 1915, are stories of Armenian individuals, but in general, they are universal human stories that we're dealing with. Loss, death, love, faith, fate, and everything that goes on through, you know, during a war. And in this case, during the Armenian Genocide, this situation was extremely chaotic. It was, the atrocities were extremely barbaric, and me being a producer and the director of this project, I had sometimes to live, you know, certain truths out, you know, I mean, not to conceal them, but they were so gory, so ugly that we couldn't even let these things, you know, these stories be told on film. You know, we tried to be as nice as possible, as they say.
But it sounds like dealing with the details of the gruesome events of the genocide have touched you personally, Mr. Maronian.
Yes. I mean, again, the way they are Armenian stories, but they are, you know, human stories to start with. And it happened to human beings. It didn't only happen this one person or these hundreds of thousands of Armenian women. The women were targeted, and it was a pre-planned target that they were inflicted upon. It's amazing how, you know, also they survived. I mean, there were three things basically that was going on with the Armenian women during the genocide. The first one was the first group of Armenian women were up, you know, right during the genocide in their homes. They were raped, beaten up, and then killed. Another group were the ones who fought, who, you know, picked up the gun or the knife or whatever and tried to resist. You know, those were the resistors. The third group, either forcibly or in some cases willingly, they gave in. And they took in those Kurdish, Turkish, and, you know, or Muslim husbands just to live. Sometimes willingly, very rarely willingly, most of the times forcibly.
So are all these three groups present in your documentary?
Yes, they are. They are. And we also see what I as I mentioned earlier, we told this general story by focusing on individual stories. For example, I'll give you the example of Aurora Mardiganyan. Aurora Mardiganyan is the typical woman of 1915. In 1918, she was already, as the genocide was still going on, she made it to the United States. But during those 3 years, she went through everything that you can imagine. She was raped. She was beaten. Her family was killed in front of her. She was sold as a slave. She was put in Turkish harems. But she survived because she was one of those resilient ones. And she made it to the United States, and she told her story. And her story became, it was turned into a novel by Miris Relief Efforts, and the book was a bestseller, immediately bestseller, not only in the United States, worldwide, it was a bestseller. And within a year, in 1919, we already had a movie about her experiences called Ravished Armenia and sometimes Auction of Souls. And this movie, according to film critique Anthony Slide, was one of the top three, if not top one, movies of the 1910s. So, I mean, there you go. This is the universality of the story. This was the story of one woman who, you know, became this internationalized heroine, and her story was told around the world. This is happening, of course, 100 years ago.
Very good. Mr. Maronian, would you like to tell us about the process of making the movie?
The process is, I mean, simply said, it is multifaceted. It's complicated. It's, you know, of course, the classic way of doing it is the pre-production and the production, then the post-production, as, you know, we know in our industry. And, you know, the way it works, of course, you start with research. You know, you find a story, you do your research, and, you know, you go deep into the story, and you have to make a decision if you will include, does it meet the criteria of what you're looking for your story. And then you tackle the next one, the next story, and then as you're researching on something, you discover something else which could be even more valuable to your project than the one you were working on. So then you have to make the decision, do I include those two, or just, have both, or just one, or, you know. And then one of the major challenges we have, since the stories happened in about 100 years ago, we're dealing with a visual medium.
Mm-hmm.
You have to show it. It's a visual medium. And as we know back then, there were no abundance of film 100 years ago, or footage, or, you know, as today we have iPhones and everything we do is it's documented. Back then, if you found a photo about an individual, you were lucky. You know, I mean, probably, per person had maybe 10 photos throughout their lives. You know, that was probably the average. I'm not sure, but I'm just estimating. So one of the major issues that we had was finding these photos, and we had to be, the photos had to be authentic, and in some cases we also found film. You know, film was extremely rare back then, but we had to figure a way of visually presenting these amazing, amazing untold stories.
What should the average viewer expect on June 4th when they come to see the premiere of Women of 1915?
Well, when they come there, they will, of course, see the stories, and some stories may be familiar to them. Some will be surprises. Some would say, wow, we didn't know. And they will appreciate the fact that, you know, finally, women during the genocide were also put on pedestal. You know, they were highlighted because, for some reason, usually when we talk about the Armenian genocide, and I don't want to make this an Armenian issue, but in general, usually men were in the forefront of everything. They were the heroes, they were the writers, they were the, government officials, they were the soldiers, and usually women are left behind. So I think they'll appreciate the fact that this time I put the women on pedestal and, you know, tried to tell the stories of Armenian women to the world that were not told before.
So the world premiere of Women of 1915 is organized by the Armenian Relief Society of the Eastern United States, and it will take place on Saturday, June 4th, 2016 at 7:30 p.m. in the Seacon Theater at Bergen Community College in Paramus, New Jersey. Mr. Maronian, you've been very gracious to us with this interview, but before I let you go, I would like to know, what is your message to our listeners today?
Well, the message is the following. I hope we fill up the theater that day, because that will be a message to the world. The premiere of a film is extremely important, and hopefully the attendance will be a large attendance. And what I would like to do, of course, thank ARS Eastern USA for sponsoring this event. And the reason we chose ARS Eastern Region to be the sponsors of the world premiere of this film is because they were the first organization that helped us fundraise. They're one of our major partners in this. And we are, you know, I'm very happy that this happened, because could we have done this without their help? Probably, but it would have been very difficult. So I thank them from the bottom of my heart. Also, I thank all the other organizations and foundations and individuals who were financially and otherwise supported this project.
We wish Women of 1915 best of luck, and to you, Mr. Maronian, continued success in your projects of highlighting the events of our history. May God bless you, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Father Marek.
Let's do the Bible reading and reflection now. This is something that we do at every podcast here. Today's reading is from the Gospel of St. Matthew, chapter 8, verses 28 through 34.
When he came to the other side, to the country of the Gadarenes, two demoniacs coming out of the tombs met him. They were so fierce that no one could pass that way. Suddenly they shouted, "What have you to do with us, Son of God? Have you come here to torment us before the time?" Now a large herd of swine was feeding at some distance from them. The demons begged him, "If you cast us out, send us into the herd of swine." And he said to them, "Go." So they came out and entered the swine, and suddenly the whole herd rushed down the steep bank into the sea and perished into the water. The swineherds ran off, and on going into the town, they told the whole story about what had happened to the demoniacs. Then the whole town came out to meet Jesus, and when they saw him, they begged him to leave their neighborhood.
The Word of God. This is one of the odd miracles that Jesus performs, but I think this is also one of the humorous miracles that Jesus performs. When we read the version from the Gospel of Mark, we see that Jesus asking the demoniacs, or talking to the demons and asking them, "What's your name?" And the response that he gets, "Legion," because they said, we are many, we're not just one. So I say this is humorous because, in a way, the writers of the Gospel are telling a joke. And what's the joke?
I don't know.
Legions are the Romans who would come to Palestine and occupy with their legions. So the demoniacs are considered the enemy. So it's politically charged. And the way that Jesus gets rid of the demons is by sending them to the swine. And again, they used to call the enemy swine, pigs. They didn't like them. And when we read this at the 21st century, we would think, oh, a herd of swine, more than 2,000 of them. They all fell and they all died. What a great loss this must have been. But when this was told to the Jewish audience, there's no sense of loss, because
of course
swine
not,
is considered,
swine is haram, or not haram in... It's not kosher.
It's not kosher. It's a dirty, dirty animal. We don't mind eating a pork chop here and there now, right, but it was considered unholy. So from that perspective, we see that in the Gospel, there is a sense of joy, there's a sense of humor that is implemented.
That's interesting.
We don't read the Bible trying to find a sense of humor, because the Bible is, especially the New Testament, is preparing us to see the salvific events of our Lord Jesus Christ, who came to give his life, to shed his blood for our salvation. But when we accept the full humanity of Jesus Christ along with his full divinity, we come to see that there are certain parts where Jesus and those who were around him, they used humor, and humor is a great thing. Today's hymn is Chorur Chorin. This is performed by Isabel Bayraktarian. We are playing this hymn today by the request of our co-host, Mr. Vehbaz Degen, who is a great fan of Isabel's singing. I hope you will enjoy Chorur Chorin, performed by Isabel Bayraktarian. We will be back, hopefully, in 2 weeks with a new episode of the podcast. In the meantime, I would like to thank our co-host and member of the Executive Council of the Prelacy, Mr. Vebes Deacon. I'd like to thank Mr. Greg Doster for all the hard work. I'd like to thank our sponsor and all of our listeners. May the peace of our Lord Jesus Christ be always in your hearts. Amen.
Today's podcast was brought to you by Dr. Carlo Bayraktarian. If you'd like to sponsor future episodes, please contact the St. Sarkis Church office at 718-224-2275.